I look high, I look low, I'm looking everywhere I go, looking for a home in the heart of the country.
I've long had a love affair with radio. From the memories of teenage nights in Big Fork attempting to tune in stations from Chicago, Memphis, New Orleans, and New York, to the 20 years I've been on air here at Northern Community Radio, I find it hard to imagine my life without it. Radio has been a constant companion and a source of both information and entertainment, and that's one of the reasons I've wanted to visit the Pavick Museum of Broadcasting in St. Louis Park. The museum is located in a gentrifying warehouse district just off the intersection of Highway 100 and 36th Street in the near western suburb of Minneapolis. On my visit, I talked with Sylvie Skoog and Daniel Henry, co-managing directors of the museum.
So the Pavick Museum is the history and science of electronic communications. So telegraph, telephones, radios, TVs, we have all of that broadcasting equipment within our space. And we were founded 30 years ago this year. Joe Pavick was a nuts and bolts salesman from Hopkins, Minnesota, who collected a lot of radios and a lot of broadcasting equipment. And he wanted to create a museum, and he actually had some sort of museum underneath his shop in Hopkins. But he wanted to create a real museum in which people could come visit and enjoy, not by appointment only. And he unfortunately didn't have the funding, so he had to put his entire collection up for auction. But, silver lining, that's when Earl Bakken caught wind of the collection. Earl Bakken is the founder of Medtronic, inventor of the wearable pacemaker. So he also had an interest in radio. He was actually a ham radio operator, so was Joe, and so was Paul Hedberg, who was part of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. So these three gentlemen created the museum, and we opened in 1988 on the 50th anniversary of the War of the Worlds broadcast.
And if you don't happen to be familiar with the War of the Worlds broadcast, it was Orson Welles' Mercury Theater of the Air 1938 Halloween broadcast of the H.G. Wells classic story of a Martian invasion of the Earth. It was presented in a news bulletin style that caused widespread panic across the nation and attested to the power of radio, a relatively new medium.
We just renovated this year to include a lot of our collection that was actually in storage or off-site. More telegraphs, more TVs, our telephone display. And we've also created a lot more hands-on activities for kids, because kids come in here, they want to play with stuff. Certain things are a little bit more fragile than others, so it's an exciting time.
We've also made our first journey into the digital world, because we have a computer display as well. So early computers, we have like a Commodore 64, early Mac. Radio is wonderful, but more and more we're finding telephone and computer is what people can identify with.
Now, the first thing I saw was a small piece of the 1858 transatlantic cable, a telegraph cable that unfortunately only worked for about 3 weeks. It wasn't until 1866 that a longer-lasting cable was put down. This small piece of cable revolutionized transatlantic communications.
Before the transatlantic cable, the quickest news could travel between, over the Atlantic Ocean, it's about 10 days by ship. And that was on the quicker side of things. So now it's pretty much instantaneous. Right. So, and then in 1866, $1.25 per word to send internationally via transatlantic cable.
In today's dollars, that would equal out to about $18 per word. Well, now maybe Twitter wasn't the first time people tried to communicate in 64 characters or less. And then it was on to the radio collection.
So 1920 is the very first commercial radio station, KDKA, Pittsburgh. And that still boggles my mind that's not 100 years yet. Also, it's the first time in history that one person can talk to millions instantly. Never possible before that. So it changed a whole lot of aspects of society.
Our biggest collection is the radio collection. It's what we're based off of. It's our strongest collection. I mean, you can see anything from the beginning of crystal radio sets all the way to 1950s consoles. Any kind of radio enthusiast loves to come in here and really look at what they might even own themselves or what they haven't been able to. So that's the bulk of where the Pavick collection comes from. There's a lot of very, very cool Minnesota-based radio manufacturers, like Superior Radio Receiver. I love this one up here with the moose, sturdy as a moose,
yeah.
Sane, which is very Minnesotan of us.
Twin Cities was an average to better than average radio market for radio manufacturing. I mean, locally there was probably at least 30 companies making radio. Back when it was more, you know, there were radio supply parts stores and things like that where, you know, you in your garage could be a radio manufacturer.
You're listening to Close to Home, and we're visiting with Sylvie Skoog and Daniel Henry of the Pavick Museum of Broadcasting in St. Louis Park. There's a lot to see at the Pavick Museum beyond the large collection of radios and radio equipment. There were sections on the telephone and television. One of the more interesting things for me was the theremin.
We have one of the 500 original theremins created by Leon Theremin in, I believe, 1928. Created right before the stock market crashed. So when it crashed, no one wanted to buy a theremin. They wanted to save their money. And it uses radio waves to create music. So you don't actually touch it. One side is where you wave your hand to create volume, and the other side is where you wave your hand to create tone. So you hear that? So that, the closer you get, the higher the tone is. And then your volume can go up.
And a wireless telegraph transmitter. And the Pavick Museum is home to the Minnesota Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
So now we're walking into our Hall of Fame. It's a large hallway with one side has 96 plaques on it with women and men who have contributed a large amount, a lot of talent to the Minnesota broadcasting industry. To our right, we have a big screen that has more inductees on its screen, and then we have the new honorees as well. So we induct every year, starting in 2001, we've inducted about 180 inductees.
They also have an extensive education program.
Two workshops we do. The first one is our broadcast workshop. Yep. It's the one we started doing in 1991, where they do we give them a presentation about electricity and electronic communication. Then they do a radio show in our 1960s radio studio, and then they go do a game show.
Okay.
Our electronic communication workshop is where the kids get to stay kind of in a classroom setting space, where they learn the relationship between electricity and magnetism through a series of hands-on activities. And then they end it with a Wheel of Fortune-like game show.
Oh.
So they always end with a game show of some sort. And then we also have, we've just developed two new summer camps. So we have one we're calling Spy Radio Summer Camp, where students will learn about all different types of spying with electronic communication, how that changed spying, revolutionized it, as well as develop and assemble their own spy radio.
Okay.
And we also have a radio play summer camp where students will be able to put on their old radio play. We'll give them a few options, a few different genres, you know, old Sherlock Holmes-esque mystery or a comedy or a, you know, a horror sci-fi, and they get to choose, and then they'll perform and really learn the art of the golden age of radio.
Sort of do it like an old style classic radio show, and they're involving, well, music most likely, and sound effects and live sound effects and things like that.
One of our most popular workshops is actually not just for students, it could be for students, it's for anyone of all ages. It's called our Vintage Radio Service class, and it's where over 10 consecutive Saturdays you get to restore your own radio. So you bring in an old radio, and then with volunteers and staff we help you restore it. So that's always booked up, always sold out. People love it, and it becomes kind of a club. You know, people really enjoy coming back and hanging out with each other as well as fixing their old radio. So that is definitely one of our most popular workshops.
And those are just a few of the highlights from the Pavick Museum of Broadcasting in St. Louis Park.
I want passion. I want feeling.
I really enjoyed spending time with others who have a passion for radio and broadcasting. For Northern Community Radio, I'm Grant Frazier, and this is Close to Home.